This is the Dairy Download, brought to you by Blumling & Associates and the International Dairy Foods Association, where we offer extra sharp market and policy insights on dairy. I'm your host, Phil Plord.
And I'm your co-host, Kathleen Wolfley.
Today's episode is about carbon markets. First, we'll chat with a consultant who helps livestock producers reap the benefits of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And then we have a conversation with a chief sustainability officer in the waste to renewables business. We'll get to that in a bit. As always, thanks to our listeners. If you enjoy this free podcast being delivered to your inboxes and favorite podcast apps every other week, please, please, please thank our sponsors. Tell a friend about the show and leave a review on your favorite podcast app.
Today's sponsor is Federal. The next generation of Federal Gravity Level fillers are here. A customizable solution to fit your needs to get the job done right. Check out visit.federalmfg.com/dairydownload to learn more about your next Federal filler.
All right, Kathleen, where are we now?
Phil, CME spot prices as of Thursday, May 5th. Block cheese closed at $2.35, down 3 cents on the week. Barrels finished at $2.38, up 4 cents. Butter closed at $2.66, 3 cents higher, and the non-fat dry milk market closed unchanged at $1.74. Phil, what do you think is the most important thing right now?
Oh, I think it's got to be macro turbulence. We've seen this building. We've talked about various elements of inflation and interest rates. And yesterday, the stock market got rattled pretty hard. And so I think the key question for us is, you know, we know there's issues out there. We know consumers are getting a little pinched. We see high gasoline prices, all those things. What we really don't have a great handle on is what does it really mean directly for dairy products and dairy product demand. But I do think the environment is getting a little choppier. And I would say that macro uncertainty is probably not bullish. I'm not sure if it's screamingly bearish, but almost certainly not bullish. So we're keeping an eye on the macro situation. Are we going to gather ourselves or are we going to deteriorate further? And how's that going to impact the consumer mood?
It's certainly a sit on the edge of your seat type situation.
Well, yeah, it's like, oh, well, the stock market just doesn't keep going up every day. What do you mean? A little of a sobriety check out there. What about you?
Well, Phil, I've been thinking about value shoppers. We saw a big drop at GDT this week. Will we see those value shoppers step up to the plate at these lower levels? Does China come back to refill pipelines post lockdowns? I think there's a lot of questions out there.
I mean, China even showed up at, you know, kind of the end of that session or during that session was a buyer on the downtick. So it does hint at the possibility, right?
For sure. What's your stat of the week?
My stat of the week is -8%. That was domestic butter demand during the first quarter of this year. A pretty sharp downtick. Now, look, last year we were quite strong. So we're measuring against big numbers from 2021. Easter timing can screw things up. But what I find fascinating about this is that price always matters. If you look at wholesale butter prices, they're up about 80% year over year in Q1. Retail butter prices up 20 to 30%, depending on how you want to measure. And consumers bought less. We'll see how that trends for the rest of the year. But -8% butter domestic use Q1. How about you?
You know, I was looking in my freezer the other day and I saw 2 pounds of butter that I'd frozen over, I don't know when I put it in the freezer, but I was pretty psyched. I'm not going to have to buy butter for a little while.
Well, yeah, I mean, right? The 2 for 7 deal isn't as appealing when you can go to your freezer and work off your own private inventories.
Exactly. My stat of the week is 428,000. That's how many jobs U.S. employers added in April, holding the unemployment rate at 3.6%. So overall, a positive employment picture.
Still some good news out there.
Yeah. Fearless prediction time. This is similar to what you predicted in our last episode, but I'm going to say we have already put in the highs for Class 3 milk this year. What's yours?
Well, in a similar vein of the highs are in, the S&P 500 this year, high watermark 4819 early January 7th. I'm not sure that we're going to have doom and gloom from here. We're about 4,100-ish today. I don't know whether that we're going to go a lot lower, but I'm going to say that the high for the year in the S&P 500 is in. We will not top 4,819.
Well, Phil, let's get to our first guest.
We're delighted to have Patrick Wood with us today. Patrick is the founder and general manager of Ag Methane Advisors, a niche consulting firm that helps livestock producers reap the benefits of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. For the past 14 years, Patrick's primary focus has been on environmental commodities like offsets, LCFS credits, RECs, and RINs that are available to dairy biogas producers. Patrick, welcome to the Dairy Download.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So dairy has been committed to becoming carbon neutral by 2050. From your perspective, what does that mean? And what tools do you think dairy can use to get there?
So let's just talk about what carbon neutral means first. Carbon neutral means that the emissions that continue to be released once you get beyond 2050 do not exceed the sequestration or storage of greenhouse gas emissions after that date, so that you have a balance. The reason we have climate change now is because greenhouse gas emissions are not in balance. So becoming carbon neutral basically means achieving a balance. We are at a really critical point towards meeting the IPCC goal of keeping global climate temperatures from rising more than 1.5 degrees Celsius. That is the goal the IPCC has set to mitigate the worst effects of climate change. That's created a big push to reduce emissions before 2030. Many of the net zero goals are set before 2050, but to meet that 1.5 degrees Celsius goal, we need to take action now. In terms of animal agriculture, one of the largest focuses is on methane emissions. Methane is a potent greenhouse gas. Depending on the time frame you look at, usually over 20 years or 100 years. But if you look over about 20 years, methane is about 80 times more potent than carbon dioxide. Cows and other ruminants produce a lot of methane. They burp it out, and depending on how their manure is managed, a lot of methane is produced. And so those are the challenge, is how to quickly adapt to reduce those emissions.
So I guess one quick follow-up question there. IPCC, what does that stand for?
The IPCC is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and it is a body of the United Nations that brings together the top climate scientists in the world, and not just climate scientists, I guess, but the top scientists in the world, several thousand of them, to assess the state of climate change and report on it. What that means is that globally and here in the US, a lot of emissions need to be reduced. And there are ways to avoid emissions by changing manure management practices. There are ways to pull greenhouse gases, or specifically carbon dioxide, out of the atmosphere by storing it in soils. And what that really means for the dairy industry, along with a focus on regular energy efficiency and processing and trucking and using more fuel-efficient vehicles, but what it really means for the dairy industry is a focus on reducing methane emissions and reducing nitrous oxide emissions. So some of the tools to get there, just thinking about manure emissions first, are anaerobic digesters have been a tool that's been ancient technology, thousands of years old, but it's really become commercially viable over the last 25-ish years. And here in the US, we now have several hundred on-farm digesters, I think approaching 400. And that is a great tool to reduce manure emissions, as well as produce renewable energy like renewable natural gas or electricity. Another tool could simply be solid separation. In general, if you keep manure in a dry environment, not in a liquid environment, you avoid methane emissions. So it's when manure is stored in a lagoon or a slurry pit for more than 30 days and the temperatures are warm that methane is formed. And so if you can use solid separation, of which there are simple screw press solid separators and other things like that that have been used for several decades, if more farms use those, that will reduce methane emissions. But also, there are much more advanced technologies. People are doing really incredible manure processing, pulling out the component parts and ending up with doing reverse osmosis and other things like that on the water. So the water basically have clean water coming out the other end. Well, if in the process of doing that, you keep manure and volatile solids out of a being stored in a liquid environment, you can reduce methane emissions. In the early 2000s, there were several farms started building them, but a lot of farms had heard about them being used and heard about them failing before. And so some farms were afraid to use them. Now, I think a lot more farms are comfortable with it. And there are a lot of farms wanting to install digesters. There are also two regulations that are part of the carbon markets, which are driving a lot of this demand for digesters and also getting digesters built. They're California's low carbon fuel standard and the US EPA renewable fuel standard. And what's happened is because of the carbon markets those create, there are more and more companies who are digester companies, or they are renewable natural gas companies who have the expertise to develop, build, own, and operate these projects. And that can let farms focus on farming rather than getting into a whole separate business or activity associated with having a digester, which is complicated. I think that in the next several years, we'll see most of the biggest farms in the US have digesters. I hope in the coming years, more like 10 years, we will see more of the farms in the 300 cow to 2000 cow range. Also, we'll see some companies cracking the nut on the economics at that scale.
And so where, Patrick, do you come into the picture? What are you helping farms with? Where, you know, are you part of that figuring out solutions for 300 to 2000 cow farms? What's your work day to day in the space, and what are you helping farmers with?
So about 90% of our work is helping farms and digester developers navigate carbon markets to support the economics of the digesters. So in simple terms, we can help them, and about half of our clients are farms, half of our clients are digester companies or RNG developers. We can help them evaluate whether carbon markets are viable for their project, how much money they can make, how many credits they can produce. And then we can help them through the entire process from start to finish. So essentially scoping out a business plan of what participation in the carbon markets would look like. And then once they decide to participate, helping them jump through the administrative hoops, helping them implement a monitoring plan so they collect the data they need in order to create the credits that the data, the regulations require. Then doing the accounting of the data to account for the credits, then managing the third-party verification that's required to create the credits. So basically all aspects of creating the credits.
Let's talk about incentives, because I'm guessing incentives is a big part of what you're working with as well. Climate smart practices obviously can be very expensive on top of other demand like a dairy's bottom line. What does the future look like? Will dairies be encouraged or paid for practices that are climate smart? Where will that incentive come from? Is it going to be business, government, consumer?
Carbon markets basically create the incentives. They are a form of a payment for an ecosystem service. The ecosystem service is reducing the greenhouse gas emissions. I hope that there will be lots of incentives for farms. And that's the reason most of our work has been associated with digesters over the last 14 years is because that's where the markets have been. That's where the incentives have been. So we have focused there. So the way the incentive works is there are, in carbon markets, there's essentially two different types of carbon markets. There's a voluntary carbon market and there are compliance carbon markets. So a voluntary carbon market could be a multinational Fortune 500 company commits to reduce their emissions, and there are many of them doing this, and they realize that they can reduce their emissions to a certain point, but they can't feasibly reduce all of their emissions in the short term. So they will go out and buy carbon offsets or other carbon credits in order to offset the emissions that they can't reduce. So that is one type of an incentive. So they go out and purchase these credits, which are sold by, for example, somebody operating a digester. In the compliance market, it's a similar situation, except that there are regulations like California's cap and trade program that require the largest emitters in the state of California to reduce their emissions. There's about 350 of the largest emitters in California, and they have to acquire essentially permits to pollute. And one way they can do that is by acquiring offsets, and they can acquire offsets from a variety of different project types, projects that preserve forests, projects that destroy refrigerants, projects that collect methane from coal mines, but also from dairy digester projects that avoid emissions from anaerobic lagoons.
And so on balance, would you say that the dairy producers you're encountering have confidence in carbon markets and that they'll, you know, that they'll be somehow fair and they will be compensated appropriately?
I'm not sure about that one. I think they hope they will be. And I think that really depends on how agribusiness and milk co-ops roll out their claims and their commitments to reduce emissions in the coming years. So farms, there's sort of a couple different situations that could happen. One is that we haven't talked much about enteric methane, but enteric methane is the methane that cows burp. And there are feed additives and feed supplements and a variety of different types that are in development. In one situation, which I hope doesn't happen, using those could be an added cost to farms. Farms could be required to reduce their emissions, but I've been really encouraged to hear several situations in which lots of the big or several of the big dairy co-ops are providing incentives for farms to use these products, whether that be paying for the products themselves or giving farms a portion of the carbon market revenue. And I think depending upon how that gets rolled out across the industry is going to determine whether farms have confidence or not. In the anaerobic digester space, there are so many developers out there, some of whom have a lot of integrity and are really great at what they do, others of whom, and thankfully, I think they are the very small minority, but may not have a lot of scruples. And so we get a lot of farms coming to us recently asking for help, figuring out which digester developer to work with, which RNG developer to work with. How do they know they're getting a good deal? They're basically making it, in a lot of situations, a 10 or 20 year commitment to have somebody operate a digester, an RNG facility on their farm. It's a lot like entering into a marriage is the analogy we use. And they want to know who they're going to be partnering with for that long. And they need some help. Many of them need some help figuring out who a good partner to work with would be.
Well, Patrick, we really appreciate your time today. I know I learned a lot about everything methane, everything greenhouse gas, and just a fascinating new world that's ahead.
Thank you. It's been great to be here with you. I hope this was helpful.
Now let's get the investment perspective.
It is great to have David Darr with us today. David is the Chief Sustainability Officer at Vanguard Renewables, a leading firm in the development of food and dairy waste to renewable energy projects. He has over 20 years of experience working with dairy farmers around the country to implement sustainable and regenerative farming practices, most recently with Dairy Farmers of America. David, welcome to the Dairy Download.
Hey, Phil, Kathleen, thanks for having me. It's great to be with you.
So you recently made a move from DFA to Vanguard Renewables. Tell us what motivated you to make that change and what's exciting about your new position with Vanguard?
Well, it has been exciting. I mean, first, DFA was and is a tremendous organization and just a great experience for me. Tremendous people, strong culture, great members across the country and an industry leader. But for me, it was really about, I'll say, an opportunity. Vanguard is an early to mid-stage company that's very high growth. And for me personally, who's been involved in dairy sustainability for a number of years, I'll say really a chance to say if I believe in this, and I believe in terms of sustainable and a sustainable future for dairy, this is an opportunity to get a little bit closer to the ground and help make it happen. And we've been here since January, and it's been a lot of fun and a lot of exciting work so far.
So could you help our audience by framing up the global climate challenge, and how does renewable energy fit into that picture?
Definitely. Well, energy is a foundational part of how we as society address climate change. Climate change is a global threat for all of us as we look at food industry, as we look at weather patterns, as we look at just market volatility or hunger, and long-term, you know, how we as society make transitions from fossil fuel-based energy and transition to things that have more of a focus on renewables and biofuel can be a significant part of how we address climate change. And if you just look at the dairy industry, you know, dairy uses a significant amount of energy, whether that's at the farm level and how we're milking and feeding cows, whether it's in the fleets that are hauling raw milk or finished product across the country, around the world, as we look at the energy usage within manufacturing plants to dry non-fat dry milk or whey or making other great dairy products, we use a lot of energy. And just to be able to think about, you know, the potential of a future in terms of renewable energy future for the dairy industry, to be able to think about the aspect and opportunity for dairy farms to be more powered by solar or wind or renewable natural gas, to think about the potential for more of our fleets to be running on biofuels that could include renewable natural gas, to think about opportunities within our manufacturing plants to be able to use some of that same renewable natural gas or electricity that could come off of farms in terms of what they do, really helps create for us and me a strong vision of how more of an emphasis on renewable energy can not only be an opportunity for the dairy industry, but really help us make us a closer and stronger industry going forward.
Dairy has committed to becoming carbon neutral by 2050. From your perspective, what does that mean, and what tools will dairy use to get there?
Yeah, well, first, dairy has really been a leader in the topic of environmental sustainability and in goal setting really around the world. You know, the work that the Innovation Center has been leading for the last close to 15 years now has been tremendous. And the fact that the dairy industry can really come together as a leader in a very collaborative and pre-competitive format sets us apart and really helps us define how dairy can be part of environmental solutions versus just being perceived as part of the problem. But when you look at what that means and what tools will dairy use to get there, you know, the great thing is we have a pretty good idea of what those tools are and need to be. And in many ways, they can all work together towards a circular solutions for our industry. But if you start with the cow, you know, obviously enteric emissions and just the ruminant activities of a dairy cow herself and produces a significant amount of methane. And how we work with farms on nutrition programs, how we look at the opportunity for feed additives, as we look at other aspects of genetics and cow comfort that can help reduce enteric emissions within the cow is one of the key tools that we're working on as an industry. Soil health and how farms are growing crops and some of the sustainable practices that they're using on their farms, whether that's around cover cropping, whether that's around no-till or minimum till farming practices, whether that's opportunity for manure to and fertilizer nutrients within manure to offset commercial fertilizer, synthetic fertilizer purchases. But soil health is another key part of our footprint in terms of the tools that we're looking at. Anaerobic digesters, like what Vanguard is doing with farms across the country, are a significant role in reducing methane emissions from manure management. And then renewable energy is really the fourth foundational part. And so as we look at the farm level, where the majority of the dairy industry emissions are at, you know, those four factors around enteric, around soil health, around manure management, and around renewable energy opportunities are really the four key areas that we're going to be focusing on as an industry to help us get to those GHG neutral goals by 2050.
You touched a little bit on anaerobic digesters. How does Vanguard Renewables work with dairy farms to try to get toward that net zero goal?
You know, Vanguard is looking to enter into what ends up being 20-year relationships with farms. Vanguard is providing the capital to invest in the projects and operate the projects long-term. But we very much look at the farms as critical partners in terms of providing manure, in terms of helping with what happens with the digestate and the fertilizer that comes out of the digesters, how we can work together in terms of soil health projects and other things. But, you know, Vanguard's goal is to build and operate a little more than 150 anaerobic digesters across the country on farms of a wide size range. We have digesters today on farms that have between 200 and 300 cows, and we're in the midst of building digesters on farms that have 8,000 to 10,000 cows. About half of the digesters that we'll be building in major metropolitan regions across the country will not only have manure from cows that are coming into them, but also relying on food waste from dairy plants, from other food manufacturers, from retail and other food institutions, to not only generate renewable energy from the manure, but helping our manufacturing industries and food industries out on some of their waste challenges as well.
Let's talk about incentives. You know, all those projects are great, and we hear more about similar enterprises, you know, all the time. But what does the future look like in terms of how dairies or even the food companies you mentioned are going to be incentivized to pursue the climate smart practices, you know, such as, you know, is there money in connecting these digesters to natural gas lines? Are the incentives going to come from business? Are they going to come from government, consumers? How do you see that incentive landscape playing out?
It's definitely changing. You know, if we look back 10 years ago, for a dairy farm, if I think about digesters specifically, you know, number one, dairy farms were the investors, owners, operators in the project themselves. So some of the incentives that they would be looking for and that were available to them were primarily around grants to be able to offset the capital cost of the digester. And in some cases, to be able to help support a fixed revenue for some of the electricity that they're producing. The marketplace and market demand to invest in dairy farm sustainability projects, including digesters, has grown exponentially. You know, there's billions of dollars in the marketplace today that wants to be able to invest with farms, to partner with farms on helping making dairy farms more sustainable and producing renewable fuels from those farms. Some of that funding and some of that demand from the marketplace is spurred and accelerated by things like in California, their low carbon fuel standards program that does provide incentives and premiums for renewable natural gas to be able to diversify and decarbonize some of their fuel streams in the state. But there's other demands for these fuels and the sustainability benefits from major food companies, multinational food companies and CPG companies, and dairy companies here in the United States and other food companies who are just looking to meet some of their sustainability goals down into the future. So we're seeing strong drivers for decarbonization, that's driven by policy, some that's just driven by the marketplace having more demand for meeting their sustainability goals and providing the funding to be able to align and how they achieve those goals.
You touched on carbon markets briefly. How does Vanguard Renewables work with carbon markets and what opportunities does Vanguard afford dairy operators that want to get involved in carbon markets?
Definitely. So specifically from our perspective, when we're developing projects that produce renewable natural gas that's going into a customer or a marketplace, in almost all cases, the carbon credits or environmental credits associated with that gas and that gas production do follow the gas. And so they go with the gas, whether it's into, I'll say, the LCFS market in California or what could be to another buyer of the renewable natural gas. Part of what we're working to do and with farms that we're working with, though, is to be able to help them identify other and additional carbon credit opportunities that are ancillary or could be connected with the projects that we're doing. So, you know, are there opportunities to work with the farms that we have digesters with to be able to explore some of the feed additives that are now in the market or coming to the market that can create additional opportunities for carbon credits and other revenue streams for farms? You know, depending on how farms are using the digestate that comes out of the digester, there can be fair to significant improvements in the greenhouse gas emissions associated with growing their crops, which again can be another carbon market opportunity for some of the farms that we're working with. So specific to digesters and RNG, you know, a lot of the carbon benefits associated with that do go with the gas. The farms do receive some benefit from that based on their relationship and providing manure to the projects. But there continues to be other opportunities through how cows are being fed, through how crops are being grown, through how other energy is being produced on farms for dairy farmers to be able to actively engage in carbon markets.
There's a big debate shaping up in dairy and ag more broadly about whether or not to sell offsets out of the commodity supply chain. It seems to be a lot of questions about who owns what, who can do what. You know, there's what are the pros and cons of the offset system and how that operates?
Yeah, it's definitely a complex and to some degree ever-changing topic. One thing we know and that's fair is that, you know, dairy farms or farmers in general aren't going to be making the changes that, that we all are wanting to happen if they're not being compensated for the changes. That's fair, and that's going to be required. Ideally, you know, it would be, we would love for there to be demand for the environmental benefits associated with those changes to be within the industry. So for all of that environmental benefit to stay within the industry. But if not, you know, if there's not the demand there within the industry, it's hard to be negative on a farm who's trying to, you know, do the right things and get fair monetization and compensation for the changes that they're wanting to do. We're working on, and there's a lot of groups within the dairy industry working on aspects of carbon accounting changes so that even if a farm is doing something with their land and they're selling carbon credits off of that, we don't want to get into things where we're triple or quadruple counting things and get into aspects of greenwashing. But there still has to be ways that, that we can be able to demonstrate and quantify how farmers are taking the steps to make changes in their practices and being part of environmental solutions. And if a company in Silicon Valley wants to pay them more than a dairy company in Wisconsin or Texas, you know, to some degree, we have to be able to recognize that, but also be able to identify opportunities to communicate the great things that farmers are doing for their businesses, for our communities, and our planet.
My sense, David, is that the pace of all this has been picking up. Do you expect things to get even faster or go even, you know, we've kind of gone into the consciousness phase and we're learning more and we see, you know, adaptation. Are things going to go even faster for in this space over the next 2 to 5 years?
That's my perspective. And if you look around the world, companies that have 2030 sustainability goals, it's almost anyone and everyone has significant greenhouse gas reduction goals for 2030, which is less than 8 years away right now. And change doesn't happen overnight. And for a lot of the companies, whether it's their lenders, their investors, their shareholders, their customers, are going to be looking at, you know, how are they doing in terms of progress against those goals. And I think a lot of companies are making progress today, but there's still a lot of work to do between now and 2030. And I think the pace of change in this space is only going to accelerate as companies are looking at, you know, what change is needed, what change, how much that costs, how much that change might cost, and what are creative and new ways to partner and collaborate throughout the supply chain towards reaching individual company goals and more macro industry-wide goals that we have for sustainability.
Let's talk about regulation. There's very little greenhouse gas regulation on farms today. What do you expect in terms of future regulation, either from states like California or with federal agencies like EPA? How should dairy prepare?
Really great question. You know, one thing I think we've done a good job of as a dairy industry is continuing to position dairy very well and really positioning dairy as an industry that's willing to collaborate. And so whether it's, you know, EPA, whether it's a state, you know, whatever the type of regulation is, I think increasingly dairy is being seen as a collaborator who can be part of solutions. But I think as long as dairy is at the table, and dairy is in the position to be able to collaborate, to be part of a solution, you know, we can work through the regulatory environment to still have a healthy, strong, growing industry for years to come.
Well, David, we really appreciate your insight. Thank you so much for joining us on the Dairy Download.
Thank you for having me.
That's a wrap for today's show. As always, we want to thank our production team, Matt Herrick, Michael Gooden, and Andrew Jerome at IDFA, and Corey Romero over here at Blumling & Associates. If you are interested in what Kathleen and I do for our day jobs, check us out at www.dairy.com or ever.ag. Remember, if you enjoy the show, hit the subscribe button and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform.
Thank you to this episode's sponsor, Federal. Federal is now featuring an automated trough and internal wash system to help keep your filling equipment clean. Check out these features and other features at visit.federalmfg.com/dairy download. Thanks for listening to the Dairy Download. Until next time, stay sharp.